Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Luxury living begins with your move to Mason, Preferred Living's newest community in the desirable New Albany area. Your suite features soaring ceilings, White Valley granite countertops, and spa-inspired bathrooms. With amenities like a multi-tier year-round pool and hydrotherapy spa, Trackman golf simulators, a private screening room, and complimentary Starbucks coffee, every day feels like a retreat. Learn more and schedule your tour at livepreferred.com.
Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Wednesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Tim Hasselbeck, our weekly chat with him coming up at high noon. But we always enjoy our sessions, our chats with our next guest, Ryan McGee, ESPN, SEC Network. He does it all. Ryan is on the line with us. How you doing?
You know, I'm waiting. We all are. It's just, you know, TikTok. We're just, it's funny, I wish you guys could see. I wish I would not get in trouble with work if I could just, like, live broadcast my email inbox. Because we have this group email with all the college football writers at ESPN, and it is like a slot machine. I mean, it is nonstop. I mean, literally right before I came on with you guys, it was, you know, NC State is postponing its season opener.
Yep.
And you know, there was some Vandy news earlier. So it is nonstop. But that's just how it is for everyone right now. How you guys doing?
Well, we apologize on the front end for being a little bit late, because the first hour and at the end of that hour, it's a lot of this is confusing for people. How, you know, we've got kids playing high school football on Friday nights in some counties, and you know, Metro Nashville is not. You know, it's just like on the college scene, right? You know, the Big Ten, Pac-12, they say they're not playing in the fall, yet they're still gathering, they're still practicing. It's like, why are you doing that? But yet, you can do that, but you can't play on. There's so much confusion, Ryan, as you know, and I'm sure you get that in the inbox with all these. People just don't know what is the right thing to believe or not or feel, because we're all over the place with everything.
Yeah, and it's the perfect microcosm of this entire experience, period, in the United States, right? I mean, it's everything's been left to the local whoever, you know, whether it's the state government, the county government, the city government, individual school systems, individual universities, individual businesses. I mean, everybody's, you know, the Walt Disney Company. I wrote. This morning I was watching Marty and I go back in the studio for Marty McGee in 2 weekends, but we're having to go through an orientation to do that. And I know that what we're doing is not what other people are doing. And I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it's different. And so, yeah, it's all over the place, and it's so much all at once. And you could kind of feel it coming. I mean, you know, here we are. We just had the Indy 500. The NASCAR playoff cutoff race is this weekend. We have NHL playoff games happening at 10 o'clock in the morning. And you know, I've got multiple friends inside that NBA bubble down at Disney World. I got friends inside the MLS bubble and the WNBA bubble, which isn't quite like the other bubbles. And it's just, it doesn't matter where you are. I mean, right here in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I live, most of the private high schools will be in North Carolina will be playing football Friday night, and most of the public schools are still waiting. And so, yeah, there's nothing good about it. And it's just frustrating because we all just want to get on with it, but we can't. And even when we can, we're not entirely sure what we can and can't do.
What's the feedback you're getting on the NASCAR side of things? The All-Star Race was in our state, as you know. You're very familiar with our state.
Right.
You live here.
Yeah, I've been there, yeah.
Yeah, you've kind of been here, and you kind of know how the lay of the land goes. And they let 25 in for the All-Star Race at Bristol. NASCAR races have been hosting fans. Have you gotten any feedback on how that's gone, what the tracks, if they've done any follow-up. Has there been – because you're not hearing anything. Are you hearing anything?
No. I mean, what you hear is what happens in the garage. You know, I haven't heard anything, and I don't think anyone's done anything or certainly provided any numbers to try to contact trace any cases back to Bristol Motor Speedway, you know, in the middle of the summer, or Texas Motor Speedway, or some of these places that have had fans. But, you know, I know what the situation is in the garage, which is kind of a semi-bubble. You know, I wrote a huge detailed story about this in May, right before NASCAR, which all due respect to the UFC, NASCAR was the first, like, big touring, big group of people sport to come back. And it came back in the middle of May, and I was there for the second race back at Darlington. And you know, it was very detailed about where people could go and what they could do. But that was before they started getting on airplanes, and that was before they started staying in hotels. And knock on wood, there have been cases, but it hasn't been as bad as I think they had braced themselves for. The trick is, and this is the lesson that the NASCAR people have told me from the beginning. I wrote a column about this, too, back in June, which is, you know, the trick is to not get lax. The trick is to make sure you maintain the same vigilance with your regulations and your restrictions in August that you did in May. And I think that's going to be the trick whenever football does return, whenever these other sports do return. And my friends in the WNBA bubble said the same thing. It's just making sure that you stick with the plan, because it's easy to get relaxed. Like, oh, okay, we're fine. And I think, again, I think that reflects everything in general. If you went to Target once and 2 weeks later you felt fine, then you go back again, but maybe this time you don't wear your mask the whole time, or maybe this time you don't wash your hands when you get back in the truck. You know, I'm just, so I think the trick is whatever your plan was, you got to stick with your plan.
We had Eric Moses on Monday's show to start off the week. Really impressive guy to talk to. He is going to be the new track president at the Nashville Super Speedway, and for Dover Motorsports. Really impressive guy. Looking forward to getting to know him better. But we had a really good interview with him, and we're excited that, you know, looks like next June, I guess. I know nothing is official, but next June could be first cup race in Nashville since the 80s. What, one, do you know much about Eric Moses, and how much have you been – kind of talking about and understanding about Nashville getting, you know, a cup race and the Nashville Super Speedway opening back up?
Well, I do know Eric a little bit, and his reputation is off the chart. And the Dover Motorsports people, that's a small, I say poor but proud organization, and poor is a relative term. But they've done a really great job and are really the last of the independents. You know, it used to be everybody owned a track, and you hosted a track, and you know, you paid your fee, and you made your gate, and that was it. And every track was owned by a different person. And then it got to the point where every track was owned by two people. And Dover had managed to hold out. And that, quite frankly, that's why they needed to move one of those Dover races to Nashville, was because in order for them to survive and to keep all their dates, to keep both their cup dates, that's what they needed to do, and that's why I think it was a super smart move. I'm excited about it. You know, I think we've all seen the enthusiasm that I knew was coming, but it's been good to actually see it unfold with the awards, with the Champions Week being moved to Nashville. Obviously, it's a city that knows how to host some people. And as someone who I never covered a cup race at the fairgrounds, but I covered a lot of truck series races out there. I'm so romantic. I took my future wife out there one time, because that's, you know, that's how I am. And the I love that place. But it, you know, has always bothered me when I flew into Nashville for the SEC tournament, and then immediately flew right out, like literally never left the airport. I flew over the Nashville Super Speedway both ways. And it's always just a bummer to me that it's just sitting there. You know, and I'm a Rockingham guy. I can tell you how sad it is to drive past an empty racetrack all the time. And so for them to get a second chance, I'll give you a lesson, again, as a Rockingham, North Carolina native. Everybody better buy some tickets, because, you know, what we learned in Rockingham was that we got a truck series race, first race back there in 10 years or whatever, and first race, good crowd, Second race, not a good crowd, and there wasn't a third race.
You bring up Rockingham real quick, Willie. Ryan, I my buddy lived close to there a few years ago, and so we drove by the Speedway, went out. They had an event out at the drag strip right there, and so we went to some drag races, and then I was like, well, I want to go check it out. Walked over to the Speedway, found a gate that was open, and went in and walked around. It was sad seeing the grass growing in the track and everything.
Yeah, and I was literally born 5 miles away from that racetrack, and I still own my grandmother's house 3 miles in the other direction, and I will literally avoid driving past it because it makes me so sad. My dad was on a pit crew when I was in the early 70s with Dave Marcus, and so my history with that place literally goes back to my dad was the gas can man for Dave Marcus just a few days before I was born. And so it was, my history of that place goes back to the very beginning, but it's, I can't make myself drive past it.
Ryan McGee is with us from ESPN. Ryan, go a little further with what you were talking about. We had this discussion the other day. We'd be curious for your thoughts. We spent a lot of time and energy as a city, talking about a upgrade of the fairgrounds, which includes the new MLS soccer stadium, which is under construction, and getting the old Nashville Speedway up to standard to where you could hold a big-time event. Now here come the Dover people. The Nashville Super Speedway is back in play. Could you ever see a scenario where each venue could host a big NASCAR event?
I do, but again, what will dictate that is the amount of enthusiasm shown by the community. So if they come back to Nashville Super Speedway, and it's like it was when I covered the very first races out there, you know, 20 years ago, whenever it was, then they got a chance, you know, because it would be two very different events. You know, I think something that we've learned with so the pandemic, obviously the list of things that are awful about the pandemic are longer than we can even get into. But there's been a couple of good things sports-wise because we're seeing sports leagues try some things that I don't think they would have ever had the guts to try before. You know, I mean, like these goofy rules that baseball is using, you know, with the base runners. Just try it. You know, if it doesn't work, whatever. But use the pandemic as an excuse to do that. And with NASCAR, they're doing things with the schedule this year that I've been screaming for 20 years, which is, you know, the All-Star race at Bristol on a Wednesday night in the middle of the summer. You know, own the summer. I've been saying that forever with NASCAR. Shorten the races. Shorten the race weekends. No one has missed practice and qualifying, except for Kyle Busch. No one has missed it, right? And so, to me, I would put this, you know, you can run different events in the same market, spread them out a little bit, and, you know, run a traditional 400-mile, you know, 1.5-mile D-shaped oval race out of Nashville Super Speedway, and then, you know, give me some crazy old-school, you know, short-track doubleheader or all-star race at the Nashville Fairgrounds. I mean, why not? You know, you don't have to, you're not going to do them back-to-back nights. But again, a ticket is a vote. So if race fans in Nashville want that to happen, then when they have the opportunity, they need to buy tickets.
You mentioned a great theme that's going on, flexibility in the schedule. We're seeing NASCAR do it, as you just pointed out. Baseball has had to do it. I'm curious with the SEC, let's just use them, but you could easily say ACC, which is, as you just hinted at, we hadn't mentioned that before, but they've already had to push a game back. What kind of flexibility does the SEC have for that kind of thing? If they have an outbreak, we saw that they've got some issues at Alabama on campus right now. We just know some of these challenges are going to happen as you push through this. What kind of flexibility is there in the SEC schedule? Because you can't just play 2 7-inning doubleheaders.
Everything has to be written in pencil. I'm as simple as that. And every conversation that I've had with Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner, about that, and every conversation I've had with people at the Big 12, people at the ACC and Sun Belt, whatever, everyone agrees that the schedule that you have in your hand that everyone has given you, it is really pretty and color-coded and the whole thing. But that thing is written in pencil at best because, you know, if a team has a sudden outbreak, I mean, we just had Lincoln Riley saying yesterday that he's missing at least one player in every position group. And so if you have a team that just can't do it, then you institute the Florida Marlins rule. All right, you know what? You're not playing the next two games. You're quarantining everybody, and you're creating a bubble. And if that team misses two games, then, you know, what's the last team they just played? They're probably going to have to miss at least one game. And so everyone's going to have to be flexible. And what I have said all along is I keep going back to what we used to tell my daughter when she was in, you know, elementary school. You get what you get and you don't pitch a fit. And everybody has 10 or 11 games on their schedule. If you play six and that's all you get, thank you very much. You know, I go back to April when everybody's like, oh, I don't want to watch sports without fans. Yeah, you do. Or I don't want to watch so-and-so. Yeah, you do. You'll take whatever you can get. And people rolled their eyes at the NBA's idea in the beginning. It's working out fine. So, my feeling is it's all written in pencil. And, you know, I really believe that if the season gets rolling, there will be games canceled. There will certainly be games postponed. And it's going to be like a Jenga puzzle. You're going to have to move this piece and put it somewhere else. And again, whatever we end up with when we get to December, and I just hope that we get to December, then we'll just take whatever we can get, and we'll have whatever kind of playoff there is, and we'll let those other guys play the Rose Bowl in May.
Ryan McGee is with us, ESPN, the SEC Network. So along those lines, we, you know, talking about high school football here in town, of colleges, Big Ten, you know, that Darren brought up earlier of, all right, well, they're not trying. The SEC is at least trying. How many games do you think have to be completed for us to look at the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and go, you guys are silly? I mean, yeah, they didn't get the whole season in, but at least they got some. That's revenue. They got some games in. Do you think there is a certain number of games for us to feel that way, or is it just they're going to be silly no matter what for not trying?
I think if they get halfway through the schedule, you know, if you got 10 or 11 games scheduled and you get to get game six, I think that's when all these people who are already very angry, particularly in the Big Ten, the parents and everyone else, there was an open letter the parents wrote today to the Big Ten. At that point, they will boil over. But I also have warned people too, you know, because, you know, I'm fortunate enough to co-host a show on the SEC Network, and because I grew up on Tobacco Road, you guys know my dad was an ACC referee for 40 years. You know, I've got ties to these two conferences, but I keep telling everyone, don't get too cocky about this, because no one's played a game yet. And, you know, if we get to the end of September and suddenly, well, hey, you know what, we're going to try this again in the middle of October. And we get to the middle of October, hey, you know what, Halloween looks really good right now to start the season. Suddenly the Big Ten and the Pac-12 don't look so stupid. And so I just keep warning everybody, again, just worry about your deal and take care of your deal. And then, you know, history will let us look in the rearview mirror and thumb our noses, whichever way we want to thumb it.
So we've done this some on the show and obviously talking to people, but I find it, I want to talk about games. I want to, you know, look at schedules and say, okay, well, who's going to knock off Alabama? You know, how much of a fall off will LSU have? But it's difficult to do because in the back of my mind, I'm going, well, I mean, are they even going to get to this game? Are LSU and Alabama even going to get that far to playing each other? Do you find yourself doing that when you're thinking about things, and, you know, whether it's, you know, talking about the show or your bosses, of, okay, I want to predict, I want to do my normal job, but it's kind of hard to do that?
100%. And I was telling you guys about that email, you know, chain with all the ESPN.com writers, and we wrestle with that on a daily basis, which is, you know, normally, I mean, the AP Top 25 preseason poll comes out, we came out on Monday. And every year, we all have this big open document where we go in and react to it. And then they publish that as a story. And we all wrote the same thing, which is, this feels dumb, right? Well, we don't have any, Ohio State's number two, and we don't have any idea what that means. But yeah, you just have to pick your spots. I mean, listen, I should be working on my preseason bottom 10 right now, which I love to do. But I can't do it because I don't know, you know. Do I just rank COVID 1 through 10 and send it in? I don't know. You know, it's just, you're exactly right. I wrestle with it on a daily basis. I mean, normally right now I would be on airplanes or at least in my truck going to practice. And, you know, I had a whole thing set up with Panay Sewell, the monstrous offensive lineman and gentle giant out at Oregon. and I had this great story set up. And next thing I know, Pac-12 is not going to play, and Sewell was one of the lead players that spoke out about players' rights, you know, back when this whole thing first started on the West Coast. So it's, yeah, I mean, I wrestle with it on a daily basis. And I'll tell you this, too. I get so irritated with the people who think that, you know, the media, and I'm putting that in air quotes, that we're rooting for COVID to win and have no football and whatever. Listen, I'm not saying this to plug the book, but I kind of am. I got a book coming out in a few weeks that I wrote with my dad about my childhood on sidelines, on college football sidelines. To hell with y'all to think that I don't want them to play football. The only thing I have invested in college football is my livelihood and my emotional well-being. Other than that, nothing, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so it's just, I'm not enthusiastic about what's going to happen, but I've also never wanted to be more wrong in my entire life.
So I can't let you get out of here without me asking a racing question. They asked the NASCAR questions. Do you think this Daytona road course is going to stay on the schedule? Because I'm weird on road courses, especially the Rovals. That we've seen in the last few years, but I'm not going to lie, Ryan, I kind of liked it.
No, it's great. In Charlotte, I mean, where I live, that Rover race has been a huge hit. I got no problem with it all. And isn't it funny how things change, man?
I know.
I remember y'all's guy right there outside of Nashville, Sterling Marlin, used to just not even – he would mail it in. He just would carry just a big wad of stamps to Watkins Glen, at Sears Point. He just did not want to be there. You know, he just, whatever points I can get, I'll get, but get me back to an oval. And now it's completely different. You know, now you look at the makeup of the garage, and all these guys grew up racing go-karts, and a lot of these guys came from, you know, road racing. And so they're the new short tracks. I mean, some of the best racing, and I love that Daytona layout. I've covered so many 24-hours of Daytona races down there, Rolex 24s, and so I love it, and I love what they've done at Charlotte. And, you know, what I don't want them to do is I don't want them to all do the same thing now. We don't need 10 Roval races. You know, if we have two, that's fine. But I've got mixed feelings about this weekend. I love Daytona. I don't necessarily miss Daytona being on July 4th weekend, but I don't know how I feel about being a cutoff race for the playoffs.
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem. Talladega for years was one of the cutoff races during one of, you know, the different stages of the three-race stages of the playoff. That never bothered me that much. But but Daytona being the cutoff for who makes the playoff or not, that's I'm curious to see how that goes, and I don't think it's going to go well.
Let's get you on for the release of your book here soon. How about that?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I wasn't trying to shoehorn it in there. I just but
it's okay, though.
But this book's called Sidelines and Bloodlines. It's a father, his sons, and our life in college football. And I've co-written this book with my dad and my brother. And my dad, Jerry McGee, was a what we call FBS now. You used to call it, you know, Division I official. He did 404 games, a couple Rose Bowls, a couple national championships, a couple Orange Bowls, a couple Army-Navy games. I mean, his resume is unbelievable. And my first sideline pass was 13 years old. And I got completely run over at the goal line trying to take a picture with the camera that Santa Claus had brought me. And I was like, this is the greatest job in the history of the world. How do I get paid to go to games? And we've all figured it out, right? Don't tell anybody. But it's, you know, you guys know, I mean, sports are the best. And the best part of sports for me, was this connection that I forged with my dad and my brother. We lost my mom unexpectedly 20 years ago, and if it hadn't been for Dad's college football schedule that fall, I don't know how he would have coped with it all emotionally. And so, you know, if you've ever wondered what the referee's yelling what the coach is yelling at the referee and what the referee's yelling back at the coach, Dad tells so many of those stories. But then there's also the stories of my brother and I, you know, going to games as kids and just learning the game in a way that I don't think a lot of other people do.
I'm fascinated by those stories. I want to read it. So thanks for coming on, as always, and we will talk to you soon.
Anytime, boys. Thanks.
All right. That is Ryan McGee, ESPN and SEC Network. Always good to talk to him. We will come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. You're going to be in the Brentwood area today around lunchtime. It's at 8109 Concord Road, Brentwood Library, to be exact. Today from noon until 2 o'clock, not us, not our show, but ESPN 102.5 The Game will be out there to support the 7th Annual Brentwood Battle of the Badges Blood Drive. That's between the Brentwood Fire and Police Departments, Williamson County Sheriff's Office, and the Fraternal Order of Police. That's sponsored by BL Harbor International. Every 2 seconds, someone needs blood. The Red Cross is currently facing an emergency blood shortage, which means blood is being distributed to hospitals faster than donations are coming in. So come out and register. You can win prizes and support the 7th Annual Brentwood Battle of the Badges Blood Drive. That's today and tomorrow, again, at the Brentwood Library, 8109 Concord Road. And the blood drive times are today until 6 p.m. and tomorrow from 6 a.m. until 6 p.m. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, a couple news and notes to pass along. I saw where the St. Louis Blues have learned that Tarasenko will need more surgery, so additional surgery for him, and he will be out for the next 5 months. Spent most of the season without Tarasenko. He came back. Obviously, they were one and done in the playoffs, and now he's going to need more surgery and is going to be out another 5 months.
Oof. And so I've seen, I don't know if, how specific that injury is, but I've seen shoulder injuries to hockey players be like that. You know, if it just, you know, the stability of your shoulders, think about how many times you get bumped up into the boards, et cetera, the rotation you have to use to shoot and maneuver. It's essential. And so that's a shame. So 5 months would put that towards January. We're in August, so September, October, yes, November, January. December. Yep. So somewhere January. So
through January. Who knows?
Through January.
Yeah.
Now, there's been a lot tossed around. Remember, I guess this was probably at the low point when nobody really wanted to talk about the next season. But when the Predators were eliminated, I did bring up for discussion the possibility of bubble cities to start next season on time at the beginning of December. That has absolutely been put out there as a possibility. They're going to be ready to go whichever direction they need to go. But I think they're bound and determined. They're already working on right now with the Players Association, going back to, again, good leadership, good communication between two sides. And it's so funny me saying this because this is a sport that's had numerous lockouts, including missing an entire season. So they've come a long way, right? But they're already working on it. What do we need to do if we can have fans in the stands? That would be great. What if we can only have some fans in the stands? Okay, this is what we're going to do. If we can't have fans in the stands at the beginning of December, can we have bubbles? Yes. Okay, let's start working on that. That's a possibility. So Tarasenko will miss some of the season, but I think they're hoping that he'll be back for the bulk of next season, and let's keep our fingers crossed that everything goes smoothly there.
What is, I've seen December 1st, is that still their target for the start of next season?
Oh, yeah. That's been the target. Yep. That's been the plan since they laid this whole plan out.
I didn't know if that was set in stone. I know it's been out there for a good while. I didn't know if that was, like, done deal. December 1st is when they're planning on starting the season.
Well, as we know, the plan, as Ryan McGee used the term, everything's got to be in pencil.
Yeah.
Even
yeah,
your color-coded stuff. But that is the plan.
It'll be a whirlwind.
Let's say they presumably stay in the bubble, everything goes well, they finish beginning of October. You've got a draft, you've got free agency, all of that has to happen in 2 months, and you start on December the 1st, somewhere thereabouts.
By the way, as teams get eliminated, right, every round that goes by, I mean, the bubble just gets, it's just going to get easier and easier. I mean, to me, I feel like they're, dare I say, out of the woods, because you don't ever say you're out of the woods, but I mean, when everybody was there at the beginning was when you know, if there was going to be problems or hiccups or however you want, stumbles, whatever you want to throw out there as something that could be played out early on with everyone in Toronto and Edmonton, and the fact that they've come away clean with zero positive tests the entire time. I mean, I think, gosh, if you've made it this far,
You're in great shape.
They're in great shape for everything to be, you know, Like I said, dare I say smooth sailing to the end, to the finish line.
Yeah, the bubble's even smaller. You only have four teams in each city right now.
Right, and to be two here, you know, when this round is done.
Right, and then they –
Well, actually, they go
the
to Edmonton,
teams
right?
will go to Edmonton. And that will be the one area where you have to leave one bubble, go into the next bubble. So I'm sure there'll be some logistics there that you have to work on. But the plan has been, knock on wood, it has been outstanding.
So would these be division bubbles? Is that how that would work? Four bubbles?
That has been thrown out there.
That'd be an interesting plan.
And I think what you would do is you would
do
say,
all divisional
how do
games?
We knock out some? Well, that's thrown out there, but I don't know if you want to do that. You could just put a schedule out and say, okay, here are each team's eight games. I saw something about a rotating, you know, eight teams go into a bubble. They play a series of games. Then you go into another bubble. You play a series. There's different things being tossed around there.
To me, the one that would make sense that you could would have more lasting, longer lasting of because you know what you want to avoid is the whole point is you know is moving around right. You're just moving
right,
around.
Right.
So to me, the way they had it set up, to me has a longer shelf life of playing more games in one place. Why wouldn't you just start off with conference bubbles again? Just do two bubbles, and everybody's just playing within their conference. And then when it, you know, you felt like it was safe to move around, then you go do those two out-of-conference games, right? However you would do
right.
that. But to me, that would be the one that would last longer, right? Where you could just stay in and just play conference games.
Well, is there a thought that if you do the division that families could come to? Because I know that you brought this, I think it was you, Darren, that brought it up yesterday. If you can tell that some of these teams are showing signs of the bubbles just wearing on them. So,
well, no,
you,
they're admitting it too.
Yeah, and they're admitting
they're talking about it.
So if you create you know smaller bubbles and have more than two, does that allow you the opportunity to bring families? Now, you know, you're not going to bring everybody, grandma and grandpa, but I mean, if you bring like the you know wife and kids,
yeah.
is that possible?
And you're there for a month.
Sure.
And everybody quarantines in the bubble. I think that's a viable possibility. There's some thoughts about you go there and you play eight games. Like eight teams are there. You play. Everybody plays everybody in this one spot. But, of course, they're hoping that by December, as you've been, you know, clamoring for, Darren, that you could at least have a percentage of fans in your buildings. That's option A, right? And in a perfect world, you could have full crowds. But I don't know if that's realistic at the beginning of the season.
I don't think that's, you know, I hope that is, but I don't believe that would be the case. I'll just go back to what I've been saying this whole time. And well, since we've been having these discussions, we're getting to these points is I would just like for December, at least the Predators at Bridgestone Arena to be allowed to attempt to have whatever percentage 10% of 17,000, you know, 2,000 people, whatever, 2,500 people or whatever the number is, 4,000, 5,000 people in the arena and give an attempt right. to let these teams have people in their building. And if you can't pull it off, you can't pull it off. I don't know how realistic that is. I don't know how much that would hurt if there's stumbles in certain markets, right? There's problems in certain markets. Then you kind of do what Major League Baseball has to do, right? You remove them, you set them to the side. But how do you make that up?
Right.
I don't know. That's a lot of stuff that's way over my head.
Well, and you eliminate all of that if you have the bubble.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
So here's the other part of the equation too. Do you have, or at least another part of the equation, not the other part. There's a lot of parts. There's so many parts we can't even count them. But if you have a policy, is it a league policy or is it each individual team has a option, fans, no fans, partial fans? Because we know that in Canada, they've been pretty strict. And as a result, they've kept their caseload to a very, very low number, which is why part of the reason why the bubble is working so well. I think by December, I would have to say, I would be surprised if all of a sudden Canada opens up and says you can have fans. Now, they do love their hockey, right? And so there'll be some motivation to let some fans in, but I think it's much more likely that they'll stay with what's been working for them until we get to the next stage of treatment, vaccine, or step closer to all that stuff.
I think it'll be like the NFL. It'll be just to each his own, right? We're seeing
maybe
right now half the NFL teams look like they're going to attempt fans in the stands and half are not. And so it's going to be kind of left up to the market, I would assume.
I don't know.
Well, and I mean, I think that would be fine if you leave it up to the market, but also this, what we're seeing of whether it's a bubble or not, the teams and the organizations that show, okay, we got to have some self-control and some discipline, it's working. And it's easier in a bubble situation, obviously. But, you know, like the Isaiah, we made such a big deal about the Isaiah Wilson situation because that doesn't just affect him. That can affect the whole team. If he got it and he comes into practice, he could shut down the Titans for 2 weeks. And that's where the discipline and the control has to come into place. So you apply that to anything that we've talked about, that if you try and you say, okay, so for Bridgestone, what, 3,000 to 5,000? Is that what we're talking about?
Three fans? Let's say 4,000 to 5,000 is the window.
Okay. So you do a throwback night to year one on a Tuesday, and that's your crowd. So that's what you can do.
Watch it now. Watch it now.
Wow.
You're going to strike a chord. You're going to strike a nerve.
I know. I kid. So you go 4,000 to 5,000, and you have strict rules in place. You say, if you're not comfortable, then don't come, and figure out the ticket situation. But you spread everybody out. You have plenty of room to do that with that type of number, and wear masks. I think you can make it happen, and we'd all have to adjust, but it's all about having personal discipline and having that mindset of, okay, if I want, it's like Jeff Fisher was saying yesterday, if you want football, wear a mask. If you want hockey, wear a mask.
Right.
And just have to understand that even if you are one of those that I hate the mask, I'm not going to wear it. If you want to go to the game, that's what you have to do. So,
and on top of that, you're going to have people enforcing, et cetera,
yep,
to preserve that. I agree. I think they're going to try every way they can to get to that point because the money, right? Any percentage of fans is better than none, and not only do you not bring in any revenue when you play in the bubble, but there's a big cost that goes with playing in the bubble. Setting up those bubbles is very expensive, right? So all you're recapturing is the TV revenue, and you're keeping your season on time, which is important. So I think it would be more of a last resort to go to the bubble, but the good thing for the NHL is they have the system in place. They know they can go to that bubble, and it will work.
Yep. All right, we will come back and wrap up the second hour. Tim Hasselbeck coming up at high noon. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Looks like the Titans are going to sign running back Jeremy McNichols, according to Tom Pelissero. Tom Pelissero seems to be the new Titans beat reporter on a national level. Was it McNichols in training camp last year, right?
He was.
That's what I thought.
He was.
I remember him with Tampa.
Yeah, because he was on Hard Knocks.
He was on Hard Knocks.
And then he was here last year. I don't know if he caught on with the team or I know, but I know, was it, yeah, it was last, or was it 2 years ago?
I think he was the last two would this be three training camps in a row?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. I think he was with the Jags briefly last year. But then was signed today. So, yeah, so he was signed. I got it pulled up now. December 2018, he was signed with the Titans. He went through training camp last year, was waived at the end of training camp on August 31st. He jumped on with the Bears on their practice squad, was waived, and then December was signed to the Jags from their practice squad, basically finished the season with them, and was waived in May and hasn't been anywhere, and now he's back. He had a tryout a couple days ago and is back with the Titans.
Who's putting up these cool graphics on Twitter for our upcoming guest? Who's doing that? Those are cool.
That would actually be me.
Very nice.
Trying to up our Twitter game here.
That is nice. I've seen the one you put up for Chris Mason coming up at 1 and Tim Hasselbeck coming up at noon. I like those.
Yeah, so you'll see those across the board.
Vanderbilt gets some good news, guys. Looks like their star linebacker, remember we talked about Demetri Moore opting out. Looks like he has opted back in.
He went Nick Markakis.
He did.
He went out. He made a decision and then looked at it a little further and rethought it, came back. So that's good news for Vanderbilt. And they're also back on the practice field after being shut down for a long weekend, basically, Friday through Monday. Or I guess it was through yesterday, right? I guess they got out there this morning, so they missed a few days there. But good to see them back on the field.
Yeah, that's good news. It's always nice to have your leading tackle back on the roster.
Yeah, they needed that. They needed some good news. I mean, honestly, they need some hope. They know they're not blind to the expectations. They have to use it as motivation. They got a lot of newness. They've got a brand new offense, different concepts. Maybe they got the element of surprise going for them. They're trying to find a quarterback. They have so many question marks, so few sure things. They've got to stay hopeful, right? I think it was Doug that pointed out. I mean, people are human, right? It's going to take a good psychological, mental toughness. If you have some struggles at the beginning, not to just want to check out. Hey, it's 2020,
right?
And I think we're all fighting that in our lives, right? Whether we have a loaded team that we think has a chance to win, and you say, "Oh, 2020, man, we may not get a chance," or I mean, you can use 2020 to say, "Well, so what? It's 2020, and you can't let it beat you, right? You have to keep fighting. Don't give in." That's my Coach Willie speech for the day. Don't let it define you.
Ready, break.
Yes. Don't give up. Keep kinda working your way through it. Don't let it just say, hey, 2020, we're out. It's 2020, man. Forget it. What's coming up next, man? 2020. That's my don't be that guy. Don't be that guy. 2020, man. What's next?
Don't give up like Tony Kemp last night, who was attempting to steal home on the Rangers. Then got caught up and raced back and made an incredible play to avoid the tag.
Oh, I got to see this.
Looked like a sure out.
I got to see this.
Go look at the Oakland A's. They tweeted it out. They called him Tony Kemp the Magician. You should see how he avoids this tag.
Does he not have a knack for that?
He was dead in the water, and what an unbelievable play to avoid getting out. He's stealing home, and, of course, you know, the play gets blown up. Catcher then throws it was it the third baseman? I don't believe – yeah, maybe it was the third baseman. I don't know who was over there covering in front. There were two guys near third base.
Wow.
And it is incredible how he gets out of the way and avoids the tag and slides in with his hand and makes it back.
If the catcher doesn't fumble the ball a little bit, I don't know if he gets back, but that's still quite the move.
Oh, man. That was amazing.
I know.
You can't do that.
No.
How many people have you ever seen?
No,
when you dive back into a base, you're diving straight back.
Right.
Right? He dives on an angle. He sidesteps as he's diving back. That was amazing.
Because he's dead to rights. I mean,
dead.
He was. But if you watch... And he might have made it back because he's quick, but the catcher has a little bit of trouble with the exchange from the glove to the throwing hand.
But they still got him in plenty of time. If
yeah.
he doesn't go sideways, Frazier's a great third baseman. he's kind of past his prime.
Is that the third baseman? I can't tell. There's two guys.
Yeah, that's Frazier.
So that's Todd, the shortstop that's coming Frazier? Over to back
Todd
him
Frazier.
Up?
Yeah. Todd okay. Frazier. He's the third base. He comes back
the
and
Todd
sort of
father.
Cuts off the Todd father. Yes. The former Met.
Former Met, former Red.
Former,
he's
yeah,
former
White Sox. Yeah. He's been around the block.
Yankee.
Speaking of White Sox, a little no-no last night.
Yeah, we haven't even mentioned that yet.
Nope.
The first no-no in the majors this year.
That's right.
Lucas Giolito, a guy that at one point was one of the top pitching prospects in baseball for the Nationals, never really got it right, maybe too much too soon, had to reinvent himself some. Even with the White Sox, if you look at his numbers, guys, he's not a guy that we were picking up in our fantasy leagues.
I had him last year on my team.
Well, last year is when it happened. Last year is when it started coming. If you look at the years before, he had some struggles.
Oh, yeah.
Some big struggles. But he has blossomed now. And that's one of the reasons why there's hope for the White Sox. They're moving in the right direction. They have a lot of very good young players, pitchers and position players. They're starting to get good, sneaky good.
It's easy. I'm just telling you. I've seen this before about the White Sox. Just
this is
easy.
The best I've seen, though. This is the best I've seen in a while of them really having the nucleus that you're looking for.
They tend to splatter. The minute you get you start feeling good about them, they tend to splatter. I'm just saying.
Well, Giolito, if you want to watch a guy with command of three pitches, he threw some nasty change-ups and sliders. He got so many swings and misses.
Well, he's a big boy.
He's a big boy, and I think he's really learned how to pitch. And I don't know if you guys saw the last out. This was really fun. I flipped over there because it was, you know, you hear in your circle say there's a no-hitter through eight. I flipped on the game. He is breezing through the ninth. He gets the first two guys. Strikeout, pop up. He's got the last guy, 0-2. And he throws one right down the middle, and a guy hits a seed, a line shot. And I'm thinking, that's it. He blew it with two outs in the ninth. But the guy comes in and makes a great running catch to win it. But a guy hit a bullet. He almost blew it on the last pitch. That's what's compelling about the no-hitter, right? It's never over until the last pitch. Kenta Maeda for the Twins had no-hitter through eight last week and gave up the hit in the ninth.
Didn't Hunter Pence cost, was it Cueto? Cost him a, it was either a perfect game or a no-hitter, but he lost in the lights.
Yeah.
It was a no-hitter.
Yeah, and now Hunter Pence has been designated for assignment.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was, by the way, it was bad.
He did? Oh, man, that's too bad.
It was like, it wasn't even close. I mean, I don't even know what he was doing on that play.
Yeah, he's been released.
By the way, I don't know if you guys have been looking, but the Indians pitching is
filthy.
Pretty darn good.
Filthy. Yep.
Let me ask you guys
ridiculous.
This.
They're amazing how they're developing pitchers.
They brought up this little string bean guy that I didn't even know anything about. And then he was nasty. I'm drawing blanks on his name. He's like 21, 22 years old because what was the situation? Maybe somebody was hurt or –
Well, that they had the two pitchers.
Oh, the two boneheads.
Plesak and Clevenger. Have they even pitched since?
No. Nope.
That shows you how deep they are in pitching. They take two guys who – those guys are nasty. Clevenger is an outstanding pitcher. Plesak is a highly rated guy who was pitching great. And they just say, well, we got other guys.
Bieber is 6-0 on the year.
The Biebs.
He was good. Shut down the Twins last night.
That division has gone from being the weakest from top to bottom to pretty stout because the Twins are very, very good.
I know that everybody strikes out today in the majors. They're not ashamed to strike out. But I feel like every starter for the – whoever's pitching for Cleveland is going to get double-digit strikeouts like every night. It's unbelievable. Like they get 10 or more strikeouts.
Every night.
The starting pitcher for Cleveland every night. It's unbelievable. Like I said, I know there's no shame anymore in striking out in the bigs, but I mean, it's like every time I look, it's like 10 strikeouts, 12 strikeouts, 13 strikeouts in the win. The starting pitcher for whoever it is for Cleveland.
Giolito had 13 strikeouts last night for Chicago and threw, I think, 102, 103 pitches. That's how many whiffs he was getting. Because sometimes you strike that many out, your pitch count's going to get way up there. Not last night. For that, the strikeouts are still it's not a good part of the game for me. I wish that the desire to hit home runs has certainly continued to outweigh the desire to not strike out, shorten up with two strikes, put the ball in play. That it's not working.
101 pitches last night.
101 pitches and struck out 13.
Struck out 13.
That's efficient.
In the no-no. All right, we'll come back. Tim Hasselbeck to start the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Luxury living begins with your move to Mason, Preferred Living's newest community in the desirable New Albany area. Your suite features soaring ceilings, White Valley granite countertops, and spa-inspired bathrooms. With amenities like a multi-tier year-round pool and hydrotherapy spa, Trackman golf simulators, a private screening room, and complimentary Starbucks coffee, every day feels like a retreat. Learn more and schedule your tour at livepreferred.com.
Sleep better and save big right now at Sleep Outfitters. Save up to $800 store-wide. Get buy one, get one free deals, plus a free adjustable base on select mattresses. With 0% interest financing, free delivery, and our exclusive lifetime price guarantee, you can't miss this. Only at Sleep Outfitters.